Okay. And that was also what Brooklyn sounds like late at night, about 3 a.m., only for a few minutes. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and we thank you very much for that. My name is Billy C. I was with you a little while ago. And thank you for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. It is 2 o'clock and time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on the airwaves here. But first, I want to let you know that Radio Free Brooklyn has been on the air for 4 whole years. As Moses Malone once said. And we're celebrating our anniversary with a big blowout party on Friday, June 14th from 6 to 10 p.m. outdoors in the big backyard at Tradesman Bar, which is at 222 Bushwick Avenue. That's the Montrose Avenue stop on the L train. It's free, but you know, of course, we're a nonprofit, so we would really dig it if you could drop a donation on us. If you've spent any time at all with us in the past 4 years, we cordially invite you to please come on by and let's meet up, as the kids say these days. Our hosts, volunteers, listeners, and listeners-to-be will all be there in the flesh. And what's better than a backyard party hosted by host? Now, if it rains, and I know some of you worry about stuff like that, we have an indoor option. So if you'd like some more information about that, radiofreebrooklyn.org. Our 4-year anniversary party on the 14th of June at 6 o'clock p.m., Tradesman's Bar at 222 Bushwick Avenue, right here in Bushwick. L train, Montrose stop. Come on down, sit right in, and baby, let your hair hang down. All right, Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm Billy C. sitting in. Our guest today is David Kramer. And he is here with us. And guess who is also with us? Lisa, hello.
Hey, Billy. I'm right here.
Hello.
Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you fine.
Yeah. Hey, Billy. Hey, David. Are you there?
I'm here. This is you phoning it in, I guess, right?
Yeah. How's Billy? Does he know how to handle the board okay, do you think?
He's been a good host so far.
He's not as good as me, though.
No,
is he?
No,
of course not.
But he shows up, actually.
He's here, though.
He shows up. He doesn't just, call in from wherever.
He actually cares enough about my show to be there in person.
How about that? How about that?
At least I haven't talked on the phone since the 90s. I'm used to texting people.
This is
pretty great, actually. Throwback.
So anyway, I just want to say a word to my listeners, or the listeners, out there. I'm at an artist retreat. Can you believe this, folks? So one of my our fellow colleague co-hosts at Radio Free Brooklyn, Billy C, is manning the station and manning David Kramer while I'm sort of doing this interview with David, session. But David's been on the show before, and the reason it's so important to us at Radio Free Brooklyn to have David Kramer on the show today is because he's having a big solo show that's opening tomorrow at Front Room. Billy, did you know that about David?
You know, I heard that, actually. Actually, I heard that in the last couple of days.
Does he look nervous? Do you think he's nervous about the show?
Well, he's so nervous he just handed me a postcard. and he
for
wasn't
the show?
And he wasn't shaking when he did it.
So we need visuals.
Really?
Even though it's
Does
radio.
Do you want you to come?
Yes,
David,
I'm...
do you want Billy to come to the opening?
Oh, sure.
Oh, it's Friday. Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. We need bodies there.
Okay. David, right in my neck, do you know what you're going to wear to the opening? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. No, I haven't I haven't given that much thought. I hope it's not too hot, because I perspire.
Haven't thought about what you're gonna wear.
I perspire at openings under the hot lights, so I'm gonna wear probably a black T-shirt, something that masks my my pores. So.
Well, so I'm gonna do a little bit of introduction here myself, just so we can all get to know each other before we really launch into like picking David apart, which I love doing. David's been on my show more than anybody else, partly a couple of times by radio and a couple of times in person. But Billy, why don't we get it get like what you do at the radio. So tell us about your shows, and we'll put that out there first, and the, before we get into the other part.
Okay, before we get to
Billy
the good part.
Billy has two shows. David, did you know Billy has two shows on Radio Free Brooklyn? Two shows.
Wow.
Yeah. So go ahead, Billy.
You have two shows on Radio Free Brooklyn. I have one that just went off a couple of minutes ago, about an hour ago, called the Attitude Adjustment Show, and it's just about adjusting your attitude, just dropping in to see what condition your condition is in, like that. And it's a more up-tempo.
Music.
It's music, and it's up-tempo. You know, help you clean the floor, you know.
Upbeat music.
Yeah, put the kids to bed so you can have a drink and watch The Price is Right.
Right,
at 11 in the morning.
At 11 in the morning. Because, you know, I'm told that's a mom's life, so, I mean, what do I
know? That's the kind of dad, I bet that's the kind of dad Kramer was when his kid was little.
That's right.
Oh, he has his wife. No, never mind. Go ahead.
Yes,
sorry. What's the other show?
The other show?
We got to move this.
The other show is called Cosmic Debris. It's on Sunday night at 11 o'clock p.m. It's a little more eclectic pop and change of tempos, jumping genres, you know, moods, stuff like that. But all music.
It's more like when you come down from all the speed in the afternoon, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like when you wake up after that 2-day acid trip.
You don't waste time with the interviews.
Right.
You go right to the music.
You don't want to talk to nobody. Right. You just put some Dire Straits on and leave me alone.
Okay, so you guys got to listen to Billy's show. Anybody listen to my show, you go to Billy's show because Billy is great. Okay, so let's go to David. David, so you have this. It's quite a feat to. I'm talking to you listeners. If you don't know shit about like what a big deal it is to have a solo show, it's a really big fucking deal for any artist, let alone like a really great gallery Front Room. David's having a show at the Front Room in the Lower East Side, which is at 54 Hester.
I have to look at the card. I gave it 48.
Look at the card.
48 Hester, corner of Hester and Ludlow.
Hester.
Yeah. It's right on the corner at street level.
The opening is tomorrow, and David's been working really hard. I know David. I've been in touch with David. He's worked his fucking ass off on this show, and his work is hilarious. It's really funny. It's smart, but it's really also very entertaining. But David, tell us about your work, and tell us about the work that's going to be in the show so we can know.
Well, let's see. So I usually, when people say like, well, you're an artist, what kind of art do? I usually say I'm a painter, which is really only part of what I do. But then when they say, what kind of paintings do you make? I usually tell them that I make really bad photorealist paintings. That's sort of what the genre is. But I don't like to think of myself as a text-based artist, but that is exactly what I am. I write, I write on my paintings, and the paintings are about the relationships between, well, the text is the relationship between the text and the image, which usually gives you this kind of feeling about, you know, it's sort of self-reflective, but it's universal. It's very self-reflective for me, but I think a lot of people get the sentiment of sort of walking around feeling like, hey, it wasn't supposed to turn out like this. It was supposed to turn out better. That's my usual theme.
Yeah,
they're kind of funny.
Funny cynicism in there, yeah. And they can see your work at dkramer5000 on Instagram. That's a great place to see the work if you want to look at it and not just hear about it.
And so I also make other things. And in this show, I'm pretty excited because there's a sculpture, there's a video, there's a hook rug, and then there are these paintings on canvas. So it's a kind of a multimedia affair over there at the Front Room tomorrow night.
So there's a hook rug, even crafts. You even got crafts in it.
Yeah, but this is great. I really
made a hook rug, which is so weird.
I started making these hook rugs, and I found myself buying my art supplies over in Michael's, the craft store. So that was very That made me very nervous. So first I started making kittens because of that. And then this one, though, I have a big tire that I made because it's a little transgressive. I needed something to show that, you know, the guys can make crafts also. That's what the...
Why don't you describe the tire sculpture installation piece? Because that's fucking rocking.
Well, the show that kind of emerged because last year, a friend of mine who's a curator took a photograph that he sent to me of a stack of tires that had a big American flag. There was like a stack of tires that was made into an American flag. They were painted red, white, and blue with stars, and the tires sort of made the stripes. And it was this thing totally turned me on, and we became really interested in making one of these. And I told the guys at the front room, I kind of pitched this idea to them that I want to do this big tire sculpture and just put it out front of the gallery. And they really did not really care for that idea, but
I didn't know that. Those guys are so great. They pushed back on you?
I promised to flush it out with a bunch of other works, like paintings and stuff, and they were interested.
Well, what were their objections?
Well, you know, honestly, even though...
Was it practical or aesthetic or both?
Well, I think there was some suspect that, you know, I was basically going to replicate something I'd seen in a photograph, but I just felt like the need to have to make this thing. You know, it really is a reflection. My friend, John Massier, who's a curator up in Buffalo at Hall Walls, he took the picture. And Buffalo, New York is a place where, you know, I mean, it's New York, but it's still kind of Trumpville, and... And so this thing really is a very kind of in-your-face kind of Trumpian kind of trope. And and I felt like it was important to make it and plop it down in the middle of Lower East Side just because I thought it was humorous. And I have, and then on the back of my flag, which you can only see when you come into the gallery, is the word fucked. So... And they really objected to that because they have a 3-year-old that runs around the gallery all the time. But they told me that she can't spell. She can just identify letters. So. But yeah. The piece, I think, is really heavy because I think it is. I had this funny thing happen about a year ago. I went into a pharmacy and it was super sunny. And they were selling really cheap American flag baseball caps. And I bought one. And then my son, like, totally... like tore a strip out of me, like, what's wrong with you wearing an American flag? So to me, it's like a very interesting
What was his point?
That American flag is owned by the right wing of this country. And by wearing one, I was somehow identifying with this kind of right, with the hardcore right. And I didn't look at it that way. I looked at it as a cheap, lightweight hat that I could wear while I rode a bicycle so I wouldn't get a sunburn on my bald head. But he you know, so he had this whole other view of it. And I kind of, so anyway, that's why this piece, making this piece.
Did he ruin it for you? Did he ruin it? Like, oh, God, now I can't wear this.
I ruined it for him because he moved to Canada, actually. He lives in Montreal now. So I think we all ruined it for him in some way. He's gone. He's in Montreal and trying to separate from Canada and also right now. So anyway, but that piece was really kind of like symptomatic. And most of the work I do, even though I say like I'm not really a text-based artist, because I am really interested in the stories. And I think that somehow that American flag piece kind of on the tires kind of involves all that story. So that's sort of my...
I think your work has a lot of... is mainly impactfully visual.
Yeah.
And they're sort of like part of the storytelling. I can totally see that, but it's not like, you know, some work where it's really all about the text. They're very integrated.
I'm always trying to make some kind of story, even if, you know, basically language, I come from, like, I'm dyslexic. I've always had a hard time with language. Language to me has always been sort of out of my grasp. I can't spell, and even now, I type on computer sometimes words, and they're just not recognized. They don't autocorrect. because they are unrecognizable. So, you know.
Do you have your own language,
yeah,
then?
So, to me, language has always been kind of you like a complex
David,
thing.
You need Kramer Translate.
Yes,
app.
Exactly. So, nonetheless, I do feel like sometimes I say things and think they have a certain meaning, and then I'll be told by someone like my wife, oh, that is not what that word means. So, but I think...
Well,
anyway, I think that so this piece, the tires, are sort of the centerpiece of this show. But I think that's
Are they going to be installed outside for the opening? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's the idea. They were really. I was hoping to just keep the stack of tires out in front of the gallery throughout the show. But you know, even though the Lower East Side is no longer a radical place, there's still some fear that they're in the middle of the night to be vandalized, and you know.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't want to leave that right on the street.
So we are gonna bring it out for the opening, and hopefully it will. We'll have a.
How big is the piece? What are the dimensions of the piece that you're of this piece on the sidewalk?
So the piece is made out of 28. There's almost 30 tires in this piece. 28 tires. There's like four stacks of these seven tires that basically are stars and stripes, red, white, and blue. And it's funny, where my studio is right by the Automotive High School over in the middle of McCarran Park. And they had a big stack of tires out in the back. And I went over there one day and asked them if they would mind if I took them off their hands, which they didn't. So now I have a giant stack of tires. And after this show, I'm probably going to ask them if they can take them back.
With the word fuck on them?
Right, exactly.
David, look at it this way. Maybe you'll sell it.
Maybe
you'll
I'll sell it. That's always a possibility. That happens from time to time.
So did you have to carry all the... How are you? Who's going to move it in and out? That's what I want to know. Billy? You're going to get Billy.
I'm
going to
get Billy.
Now, I get it.
I am so expensive.
Billy, you want to help?
I am so expensive.
You want to help with 30 tires?
I'm so
That's
expensive.
That's why I'm having David on the show to get you involved.
You know what? The last time I carried... Forget it.
There was a car attached to it. Just leave it at that.
Yeah, so...
David, that's a big job. I'm a little worried about it. I'm glad I'm not going to... That's the only reason.
That's
I'm
why you're out of town? Yeah. Well, it's too bad you're going to miss
the opening. Well, we could have made Phil do it. You know, he kind of owes you a favor.
Right.
An installation favor. Because David... Phil, my husband, coerced David Kramer into helping him do an install for him.
Yeah.
Never mind. True.
You're just bringing
that
up open wounds there.
The car tires,
you know, Phil's in the house here, in this residency here. He's like, he probably has his headphones on because he's not running in going, what? What are you talking about?
He doesn't listen to your live streaming.
So, David, most of this, everything you made pretty much, but it's like stuff you made in your studio, except the real wild card from what I, observing you put the show together, you know, in little windows over, I don't know, you've been working on it for a while. I know you're very, very excited about it. You put a lot into this, you know, in the last 6 months or so. I know you've been really focused on it. But the one wild card for you really was the video that you made, right?
Yeah, this piece...
David, that was a wild card,
wasn't it? It was a wild card. Well, it turned into a wild card.
am I right about that? How did that feel? Was that, like, what was your thinking? Like, how did you, like, that was, you know, making a video is always kind of risky, isn't it? Because it's not like making a piece of art where it's in your studio and you have control over it, blah, 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 production. So,
well,
talk about the video, like, how you got making it. And, wait, I just want to tell the listeners that David makes some really great videos. He's had screenings at galleries of his videos. His videos have been at the Pompidou, right?
Yeah, I've shown my videos at the Pompidou and at the Whitney.
This isn't David's first video, but he doesn't make them all the time. And they are, as you all know from your having your own iPhone, that videos are tricky. So go ahead, tell us about the video.
Yeah, well, I mean, just I like to have a video component to my shows because it adds some, like I said, I always feel like the paintings and there's always some storytelling, backstory is always interesting, the anecdote. So a video is a really good way to deliver a story of sorts. And I don't know, this one kind of, this kind of developed out of, like my studio is in a building in Williamsburg. I've had my studio in the same place for about 15 years. And, you know, Williamsburg, there just aren't that many artists left in that neighborhood. It just has gone from being a kind of dog-eared, kind of rough. I mean, North Greenpoint was not really a rough neighborhood, but this was where all the factories were and everything. It was kind of a rundown neighborhood. Anyway, my landlady and her sister kind of, it was their building. They owned the whole block, and they kind of got divorced. And so my landlady kept half the studios together as they were, and I was in that half, and the other half they kicked everyone out, and then they knocked down the building, and in doing so they turned off all the power in our half of the building, and we had to get a generator outside, and they started digging holes to try to run power for Con Ed. Anyway, it's been an arduous task to get power back into the building, and so I've been going to work
worse
in my
moving all those tires.
Yeah, well, where some of those tires, because they still don't have power in the building. Other than it's like Puerto Rico over there right now. We still don't have power. So anyway,
that's so fucked up. And you're paying rent.
And we're paying rent. So no, we have power, but it's on a generator. But the and there were people like workers coming in and jackhammering the floor and digging stuff. They never told us as tenants. At any point, like, hey, this is what's happening. It was just happening. So the video was just supposed to be like, I just wanted to do like this, because it was so chaotic, I wanted to do a video shot just to kind of capture this of like a walk up, a walkthrough. Like I was thinking about like in Goodfellas, Martin Scorsese's film, when the main character walks through the restaurant and goes to the club and he walks through the back. He walks through the service entrance, through the kitchen, through the backstage, and then he winds up at a table right in front. And I wanted to kind of create that kind of a shot.
David, isn't
myself.
That like a one tracking shot thing? That's really ambitious.
That was what I tried
to
shoot.
Thinking?
So I was thinking that I hired this kid to be my cameraman, who was a friend of my son's. And I was like, he can do it. Anyway, so I got it. This
also,
is where the wild card begins.
Your son is a freshman in college. We're talking about an 18-year-old kid, okay,
yeah.
Guys?
So my son is 18. His name is Martin, and Martin lives in Montreal, and he's studying filmmaking up in a university there, Concordia University. Anyway, when he was in high school, he and his buddies were making these films together. And I ran into one of his friends on the L train, and he told me he had dropped out of school and was working as a cameraman. So I thought, oh, maybe I could hire him
so
to come
help
me.
Oh, great.
He sounds responsible.
Cheap labor. You're exploiting teenage kids.
He told me he was he wanted to get out of school so he could hustle. He was a hustler, and he wanted to, was working on some jobs and... So anyway, I hired him to do this Steadicam shot for me, and he said he could help me edit the video. And so anyway,
let me ask you something, David. I just want to ask you something. Did you talk to Martin? Did you get Martin's take on whether he was going to be a good guy to hire?
Well, Martin used to work with these two friends of his. He used to work with these two friends of his on films. His friend Leo and this other kid, and Sebastian. And he told me, well, you know. I said to him, yeah, I ran into Sebastian. He sounds like a real hustler. And he said, yes, yeah, Sebastian's a hustler, and Leo's a sociopath. So anyway, I hired Sebastian, and he came over, and I got all these people together, including you, who was
including
in the, including you and Phil. I got about a dozen people together, and I had made some props and did all these things so we could have this long tracking shot up into my studio. Which we shot, as you remember. I had a craft table. I bought smoked fish over at Acme. We had the whole craft table. We did a really nice, I did the whole shot. I got all these 12 people whatever, to come over to do play parts as we had this sort of circus of going up the stairs into my studio to this sort of dissolving shot of me at the end. And I had actually put it together. I had another friend who I became this art collector. He's actually a collector, but I I got him to play
he's
the part of the
star. Of the
I got him to play the collector who kind of wanders through Williamsburg and notices that my building has been knocked down, and then he calls me up and finds out that it's the building next door, and he comes up to my studio, and that was basically what the premise of this film was going to be. Just like it was all about this one shot of how crazy my building had turned into as a result of this electrical problem. Anyway, we shot the film, and I gave a lot of notes to Sebastian. We were going to get together, and he edited a clip for me, a piece of what, you know, of the whole thing. And then he disappeared. And that was all I had, was this shot.
A rough cut.
It was like this
and
rough cut.
And that was it.
It was all I had. He disappeared. And we would occasionally...
Did you call his mother?
So anyway, this was like a crazy... This was crazy. I spent so much energy getting this whole thing together and doing this shot and making this whole thing happen. And all I had was like this one sort of pack, this thing that he sent me, which was very unfinished, very... But there was a lot of...
Did you give him the money up front? David, you trusted a child.
I trusted a kid.
You trusted a child with your professional...
He was a hustler, exactly. Yeah, really got it.
I just want to know, David, did you give him the money up front?
Well, I did pay him, but it wasn't a lot of money. There was more money to be made if I told him we would get together and... Anyway, it was crazy because the guy did contact
Billy,
me at one...
Billy. Never mind.
At one point.
Glossing over it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
I'll tell you, though, this kid said to me, hey, you know, I got like a text message out of the blue from him. And he's like, I took your notes about what we should do next with the editing. And I'm just uploading right now. I'm going to send it as soon as it's uploaded. And then I didn't hear from him again. And then he reemerged and said he was going to do it again. And anyway, by the third time, I just stopped responding to him. But I did make my son feel very guilty about having a really irresponsible friend.
Guilt-tripped your son. What'd you do?
But I ended up getting Martin. He came home from school for on a planned vacation, and I said, "You got to help me with this film." And we watched it. I was in Montreal. We watched it, and he was coming home, and he had some interesting ideas and I had some interesting ideas, and together it was very kind of cool because the film turned out, I think it's kind of great. It's very open-ended.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a, it's not like a movie where there's a resolution at the end of it, but it is this experience of going through my building and seeing this kind of crazy change that's happened to the neighborhood. It's all in there. And it really couldn't happen without my son. And I, it's funny. For years, he would like kind of say things to me like, "I want to come over to your studio and, help you. I'll help you, wrap
how old?
Your."
What age?
And he was like 16, 17. And he would come over and we'd get nothing done. He'd be like, "Let's go to Peter Pan. You get donuts. Can you buy me lunch? I'm starving." You know, like we got. And so I was always like, this kid is just never.
Like he wanted your attention?
No.
And that's why he was asking,
Think it was that. I think he really wanted help. He just didn't know how. But this now, he completely saved my ass. He is like, now I feel like I am working with someone who is like, we're on the same level now. He has skills that I have no handle of. And
Billy,
it's really impressive.
Were you surprised how skillful he is?
I was surprised how skillful he was. It was without him,
really?
This thing wouldn't have come together. It was great. So.
How did you feel? Was there a little bit of like how Phil felt when he found out, when he realized his son like could kick his ass on a bike? Was it like, oh God? Was there a little bit of that, David?
There was a little bit
a little
of that.
Bit.
Although he did send me a text yesterday. While I was installing the show at the Front Room, I got a text from him, and it was like, "Hey, I got an idea for a project we should work on together." And I immediately said, "Hey, I'm busy." We don't want to get too sentimental here. This was, there's still that catch in the cradle song that we got to live through.
Working with him, did he feel responsible, or what was it like working with him?
Well, that was actually really funny. The one thing that was really funny about his friend, who he was at a certain point, he just said to me, "Just forget about him. He's not your problem. The problem is you got to finish your film." And that was like pretty.
Who said that to you? Wait, who said that?
Martin said that to me. He was like, you guys.
Martin said that? So fucking mature.
Yeah, he was like, you know, there's no time to be angry at this kid anymore. You got to get this thing done. And so he was.
That's such a good attitude.
Yeah, it was.
It was like mature attitude. Wow, good for him.
It was great. So, you know, I mean, he had some ideas and some of them. Look, he had some ideas that we were thought about adopting and some that he just was very good about adopting my ideas. And we made some, when he came to New York, we filmed a few things and we spliced them in before the walk-up and after the walk-up. So it doesn't interrupt that part that we wanted, that I had intended that Sebastian shot for me. And so that's sort of the skeleton of the film is what that guy Sebastian sent me as like a rough cut, but it really works and holds the whole thing together. And we hung a lot of fruit on it. And now this thing kind of is a really nice, I really love the way the video looks. It's, like I said, it doesn't, you know, it's like a 70s film. It doesn't resolve any answers. It just leaves you in the sort of interesting mood at the end of it.
It's also part of a bigger show. I mean, it's got a context.
So I think it really,
like going to a movie.
I think it really enhances the installation. It's on a flat screen up against the wall. It's not a projected video. It's an aspect of this entirety of my show. And so, you know, and I think it really adds a lot because the show, all the paintings have a certain amount of complaint, a political kind of complaint. And this is sort of a political statement in that it's about gentrification, which is a political issue. It's about, you know, the uncertainty of your studio and the certainty of brunch. In Brooklyn, right now. You can always get brunch. You might not be able to find a studio, but you can definitely get brunch now.
Or people's values and priority, and how artists fit in there.
Yeah.
So, do you feel like Martin really gets your aesthetic? Did you feel like you could really like? Was there like conflict? Did you have arguments over ideas, or were you clearly in charge?
It was he let me do my thing. He serviced my vision.
He let you have the vision.
But at a certain point, like when we got this, when I had received this edited cut from this kid, Sebastian, it was layered. The sound was all layered. I had a drummer drumming. And that was part of it. So as you went up the walk up, you would hear the sound of like the generator and then the sound of all the ambient noise of the construction that was going on and the mopping and everything else that was going on from the 12 people I got to do different roles there to make noises and do things. And then the drummer, and then you came into my studio and there was a music overlay of a song that I was into. So what I essentially did was I mentioned that to Sebastian originally, and he sent me a package of it all together rendered. So there was no way of separating the noise. So Martin and I had a long discussion about getting rid of all the noise. He had this idea because he was very into sound. He's really into sound, and he wanted to rebuild all the sound by using stock sounds of jackhammers and whatnot. And I just ended up going back to the drums, and we just stripped away all the sound except for the drums. And that was what we ended up doing. But and it really pulled the whole thing together. And we have a drum solo. We have our the drum solo now becomes the only sound of that walk up as you go. And so it turned out really great. But his
really
idea
cool
was
aspect.
Super. It really motivated us through. We had to talk about that and get to that just to sort of unpack where we were. So I was really. He was very helpful in the creative process. So.
Wow.
That was
Look
great.
At that. You guys had a growth experience.
We had a growth experience. Until
Look
he texted me about
Look
his project.
I'm worried that you took away from Martin's schoolwork, do you think?
I don't know. He's a good student. He does well.
Something else.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good student, though. He does well in school. But
I bet it gave him a lot of confidence.
I think it was good for him. I mean, he's up in Montreal right now taking classes, and he got to work on a film project as a sort of happened to be for me, but it was like his first professional job as a professional editor working for somebody else, and now he knows what it's like to not get paid.
I was just gonna say he gets stiffed.
Which is the number one lesson you should learn as an artist. You're never getting paid.
Part of a college education, right? Getting a college education.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe a few free meals.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, he's unfortunately he can't. He's in the middle of school. He's going to come to New York in a week or so, and he'll visit the show and see his work, and he's pretty pleased with it. And it was a great experience for us, but it was really kind of like I said, when he used to come to my studio, I always enjoyed the company, but it was like, I'm not getting anything done today. He's going to come over, and I'm just going to have to take him for pizza and donuts, and we're not going to get anything done.
Were you like, oh God, I got to let him come to work, right?
He has
to see what I do. Do you see influence though? Somehow those studio visits, like maybe not at the moment, but maybe they had influence in the big picture on him.
Yeah, no, he's I think he's very serious about his filmmaking in a way that is miles ahead of where I was at his point. When I went to school, I didn't know any artists. I didn't know what an artist did, how an artist did their thing. I mean, he's in a different business, but it's a similar business to what he's heading towards. But he has had, I think it's really influenced him. And I think aesthetically, he's seen a lot, and he's building his own aesthetic. He's very
The thing that's cool is like you listen, guys. I know David has a very good work ethic. So, do you think that's part of what he got from watching you, the work ethic thing?
I don't think he got the work ethic thing from me.
Yeah.
One of the main reasons why he's in Montreal this summer. He came home for Christmas.
I can't tell. Do you think he doesn't work? Do you think he's not that motivated?
No, I think he's fine.
Is that what you're saying, David?
No, but when he came over Christmas, I said to him, he was here for about a week or so, and I said to him, you should stay in Montreal because you don't need me telling you that you shouldn't sleep till noon and that you need a haircut every day, and you're not going to have to hear it from me. So he's in Montreal doing what he does, but he's doing well in school. And he's making films and doing his thing, and I'm very impressed. And when it was time to get this thing together, he was able to organize himself to help me with this project, and it came in.
He got it done. Unlike his pal.
Is he still
in touch with his pal?
I don't really know what happened with that guy, but I told him in my last email to him that I was going to give him his credit in my film.
Berate him on a radio.
But if
show.
Anybody
Tell
asked me about him, I would be unfiltered. So if he wants to use me as a reference or show anyone that film at any point, and they come to me, it's going to be unfiltered.
You can basically make or break a young filmmaker's career.
Did
Susan, your wife, have to intervene in any of this negotiation with your son?
No, she was great. She was pretty happy. I mean, she did want me not to bother him while he was in school. He had his own projects. What am I doing? But I think it was actually very, she understood it was a good thing for him and me and us to work together. So
the work's all done and it's hung, right?
The show is hung. I hung it yesterday. Crazy. So it's always weird.
So it's just ready. It's ready to go.
I mean, the weird thing about being an artist is, you basically are not the center of attention. Your work is. So you put it up and you leave the room and you let the room do the talking. It's a very interesting kind of dynamic, very different from actors or from musicians. And you're really, you're just letting the work speak for itself. So it has started since I walked out of the gallery. So.
That sounds something that, like what Robert Mueller said.
Sorry. I can't wait to hear how you got from that to Mueller. I can't wait.
The word speaks for itself. No, it doesn't, David. Everybody knows what the fuck does Robert Mueller think? What the fuck is Kramer thinking? Come on.
All right, that's why there's words on my painting. Spell it out.
You know what I think is great about having your own art opening? It's like your birthday party. You can drink as much as you want or do whatever, and no one's gonna like. It's like that's his opening.
Yeah,
he do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Billy, I can't go. Are you going to go to the opening? Because I want to hear how David behaves himself.
You know, I'm probably going to do is because now that he's had a good look at me, so I can't just walk in. I have to sneak in. I have to wear some kind of disguise and pretend that I'm somebody else and be as incog. I like to call it incognito.
Incognito.
I got to be a black guy that's not noticeable.
Right.
So I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to, if he's there, I'm going to just like stand behind him at certain points and go, "This is really good." And see if he recognizes that it's me, and then I'm sure everything will be great after that.
Yeah. It'll be well. It's good.
We didn't do another station ID. We didn't. What? We have to remind everybody that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit every Thursday, 2 to 3. And I'm speaking with David Kramer, who's having an opening tomorrow at Front Room Gallery at 48 Hester Street. Do you know Phil gives me shit that I don't? He says that I don't give it to. I don't remind people enough when they're listening, what they're listening to if they come in late. That's the kind of criticism I have to deal with.
Yeah. There's no streaming underneath the underneath the screen like on CNN where you just know what you're watching. They tell you, they put the quote on right after the person says it, right underneath.
I think I overdo it, actually.
Do you? And then I'll get yelled at if we don't do it enough, you know? So you finished this work. Does this work particularly, like, how do you feel? How do you feel? Were you working to the end, or was it rushed, or done, or what are people going to say? Or
I'm pretty excited.
How are you feeling, David?
I'm feeling good. Some of the work is really brand new. The most recent painting in the show is a big abstract painting, but with text on it. And the text says, "I'm competing with kittens to get your attention," which is a reference. It's called hashtag Pleasant Cats. And that one's kind of a funny. I mean, it's kind of a sad, funny painting. But my father-in-law passed away this past in the late fall. And he was sick for a long time, and my wife would go out and visit him and her mother all the time. And she said that she would come and he would, you know, be taking morphine in hospice. And he would always say to her, they had a big TV right at the end of the bed, and he'd always say, "Put the kittens on. I want to watch the kittens." And he liked watching these YouTube kittens shows.
Really?
He loved that. And he never owned a cat in his life. He owned dogs. He was a dog guy. But like in his sort of, you know, in the waning days of his life, he just loved watching the kittens. And so it was a little bittersweet joke, but it is about, like, you know, how social media has just, you know, like, it's the either you're listening to like this garbage that the president is putting out there on Twitter, or you're looking at kittens. Somewhere in between.
No, you.
And somewhere in between, I'm trying to get everyone's attention.
You know, I feel that way about cute animal videos. There's something about them. I call it like animal porn, but there's something about it that is so like visceral.
There's something about
it. I don't know what it is.
I don't, you know, it's funny, even my wife became addicted, so we would sort of sit together in bed, and I'd be watching the news, you know, Rachel Maddow, and she'd be looking at her phone at the cats playing with yarn.
So cute. That's what we need.
It keeps you calm in these sort of crazy days here. So.
Well, I keep thinking about how Instagram has really changed the entire art world. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think Instagram is, you know, it's funny. Last summer, I talked to you about this before, but I did this residency and I went to Zurich for about 5 weeks. And I decided while I was there, I was going to do this Instagram residency. So everything I made while I was on the residency, I just hashtag Zurich Artist Residency. And I was very prolific. So I put stuff on Instagram once, twice, sometimes three times that day. I was making small drawings, big paintings. And it really kind of like got my career, which at the time there was very little going on a year ago. Now it was sort of kind of that was what was going on. And now I'm very busy. Now I have all kinds of stuff going on. And I feel like a lot of it sort of transpired because of this like Instagram sort of explosion that I was doing. I suddenly had a lot more galleries were following me. I don't know how it happened, but somehow it started to spread and spread and spread. And I really attribute Instagram to a lot of the attention I get right now. And it's funny, I was at a show recently and I ran into this artist I know who's doing really well. This guy, Rico Gatson, he's doing phenomenally well right now. And I said to Rico, who's an old friend of mine, a sweetheart, I said, "Hey, Rico, man, you're doing great." And he said, "What about you? You're doing good too." And I said, "Only on Instagram." But I mean, Instagram is a lot of people, the nice thing I like about Instagram personally is like, I use it as a place to put up pictures of my work almost exclusively. And a lot of people do that. And there are people that put up pictures of the sunsets and all that other stuff. And I look at those and I just paint pictures of their sunsets and then write text on them.
It is a good way to, you know what I feel bad? I feel bad like for people that make those kind of paintings that, or artwork or anything really, that really needs to be, I mean, we all know like everything is better in person, including going to the movies is better in a movie theater.
Right.
But the thing is that there's a lot of really great work that just does not translate well to Instagram, right?
Yeah, my work, we all know that. My paintings are I always joke that my paintings are kind of like handmade memes. Because they're like pictures with words on top of them. And when you take a picture of it and put it on an Instagram frame, it's just like it's the perfect format to look at the paintings. I think it's true.
Yeah,
people make paintings that don't photograph well. And mine probably don't photograph that well, but they look good with a screen with light behind it. It just makes everything kind of look better. So.
Well, but it's also like the idea, your idea, and I like work like this, which is partly why I like your work so much, is that I like work that has more of an intellectual meaning that you can think about it. It isn't just like a visceral or like an emotional response purely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, a lot of work is really just, I think there's a lot of art where you're really being asked to have a pretty emotional response, right?
Yeah, I think so. Or you're supposed
to respond
to technique.
I think that work is tough on Instagram.
Right.
But I also don't like the idea of training people to look at art on Instagram. I don't like that idea.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But you know what it comes down to, I think, is that through all of this social media and online stuff, it's basically talked everybody into pretty much staying in their living rooms all the time.
Yeah. You don't need to go anywhere.
Well, you know, the difference now is now you have something to do. I used to stay in my living room all the time, but now I have something to do when I'm there. I just sit there and stare at the wall, but now I can look at other people's art. Yeah,
but you also, there's also like less reason to go out and see people, you know, less reason to do anything, to go anywhere.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Why would you want anybody to see you in public when you spend all your time looking good for Instagram, right?
Yeah.
Then if they see you in real life,
yeah,
man, it's harsh.
Yeah.
If you care, which I don't really.
It is really interesting, though. Like the I always am talking about this. In particular, my wife and I are always sort of commenting because, like, in back when we used to like participate, I used to write much more long-winded kind of text-based pieces, and then I would read them at these performances. And she would do these. She was part of this sort of performance art kind of, you know, she was sort of dabbling in that and doing things. And we were always saying, like, it was weird. We would go do these things at galleries or in dark, you know, black box theaters downtown. And people showed up.
Right.
And how did they come? We don't even know. There was no Facebook. There were just, like, word of mouth, people putting signs up with tabs, or you maybe put an ad in the Village Voice or some, or whatever free press there was. But how did people know? And people came and went. And now people seem really willing to wait online much more than they did that. Maybe we had
no, you're right about
but
that.
It was really interesting.
Well, you know what really scares me is these teenagers, particularly I think about teenage girls or what could have happened to me or, you know, people, you know, my peers they make up all these stories and they photograph themselves in all these different places and all this shit. Have you read about that?
No.
These girls that just like live, they like pretend they're at all these, going to all these places.
Huh.
And then they put it out on Instagram and like none of it's true. Like you could make up a whole life that way.
Wow.
Which is sad. Yeah. Very sad.
It's a lot of work.
I should really, but it's giving me an idea. Maybe I should be doing that. Why live your life? Just live it on, you know, just pose yourself in different places.
Well, I would, if you were satisfied with that as like your, you know, like your art thing, like Cindy Sherman taking pictures like a movie still, that's pretty great. But if you're just throwing it up there and then you're still dissatisfied. Mm. You got a problem. Then
well,
I do feel sorry for you.
I think
if you're
really good at it, though,
I think it's great.
Yeah, it would be great, right? If you know how to capitalize, on that.
Or you're really into it.
But I think that
here's me on a space show.
Yeah, well, you know, like get really dressed up in gowns and just go to like all the like film openings. Go,
well,
go
I want
to
see,
but
I want to see you put up on Facebook, on Instagram tomorrow that you were at my opening, even though you're not going to be there.
I might.
Hey, there you go.
I'm going to. I think I will.
A little Photoshop.
Maybe you can photo. I'm going to find. You know what? I'm going to do that. I'm going to get a picture that somebody else took, and I'm going to Photoshop myself in there. You'll see. I know. I'm so bummed I can't go to the opening that I'm at this great artist colony.
Yeah, so what are you doing up there? Are they giving you like picnic basket lunches for you to so you don't have to leave your studio? You have like you're making
No, not quite like that. Not quite like that. But we are out in the woods.
I did a residency once at Yaddo.
Yaddo.
And at Yaddo
they
said that you were not allowed to talk to anybody if you saw them on like in between the buildings on the path, if you ran into someone, unless you both somehow wordlessly acknowledged that it was okay. You were supposed to give the other person a wide breath.
Unless you wink at them. So could you like, could you have sex with them?
I think you could. I think you could. As long as you didn't talk. So anyway, hopefully they have that kind of a silent kind of arrangement there, and you and Phil can not talk to each other and have an excuse.
I think this is quite more informal than that. A lot more informal. My husband and I have like a separate cabin because you can get a cabin here, and then they have a couple of cabins that you can apply for, and then they have most of the bigger group in the main house, which is all mostly beautiful young women, frankly. Oh. So maybe Phil will be staying behind. I don't know. It's possible.
Yeah, hanging on those picnic baskets.
Right? I'll see tomorrow, you next Tuesday.
Tomorrow's the share, though, where we'll all be sharing our work with each other. So we'll get to see what everybody does and stuff like that. Wow. So,
when did you get there?
I got here, when was it? Was it last Thursday, a week ago?
A week ago. Wow.
But I'm doing this benefit at Chisama, so I had to leave for a couple of days. I'm very excited. I'm going to be doing psychotherapy, and I have a little office set up at this benefit for Chisama, which is a great organization. So, so that kind of interfered a little bit, but besides that, you know, it's just great being outside in nature. But I'm going to be back. I'm going to be back for our party on the 14th, our Radio Free Brooklyn 4th anniversary. Do you guys know this is my 199th show?
Wow.
David, you are my 199th
wow.
guest.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that incredible? Amazing, incredible, right?
That's great. So you've gotten so good at it, you can just phone them in now.
I'm trying to get Billy to take the thing over now.
I don't know if you want to do that. I mean, I would do it.
I think you could do that. You're at the studio anyway. You might.
Yeah, I'm already here. So I mean, what the hell? I take over a few other shows while I'm here, actually.
Billy, you know what? We could just turn over the whole station to you, and you could be the DJ.
Oh, you know what?
The DJ talk show host.
It would be, I don't know.
Over.
I don't know if I want people to know that many things about me. Oh, my God. He wails like a dog. Well, it's amazing.
David, you know, Billy was a guest on my radio, on my show one day. We had him as a guest, and the headline from the show was that Billy made out with Marianne Faithfull.
Oh, all right. I'll have to go back to the archive for that.
No, but when they were, you know, in her heyday, heyday.
Oh yeah, when she was cute.
In the record store.
I'm sorry, anybody who took offense to that, but I'm sorry, she was cute.
Did you get any diseases?
But she was. You know what? I'll tell you. The only thing I want to say about that is that after I was finished, I think I told you this. I was working in a record store, and everybody was staring at me. And I was like proud, you know, that I made out with a famous rock person. And he said, "Do you know where those lips have been?" And that made me more proud. I said, "I'm like with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame here, you know." It's like,
it's all perspective. I like your perspective.
Same lips that were on Mick Jagger's dick.
I'll walk down the street and say that.
Secondhand gave a blowjob to Mick Jagger.
Yeah, I'll tell people that. Try and chop me.
I'm gonna go back and put that in there.
Try to chop me.
Yeah.
Mick and Keith.
So. Yeah.
Billy, we got 1 minute left. We've got to wrap this shit up.
All right.
Okay, we got to go.
All right.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. David, say the stuff about where and when your show is again. Go on.
Okay.
Hurry up.
Please come to tomorrow night, 7 to 9, over on Hester and Ludlow at the Front Room Gallery. My show is called David Kramer Tired Jokes. It's up for the month of June.
And it's going to be up until?
End of June.
End of June. The date, you don't even know?
I don't know.
Billy, thanks so much for helping out today.
No problem.
And Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit about